Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O my Lord, the material miseries are without factual existence for the soul. Yet, as long as the conditioned soul sees the body as meant for sense enjoyment, he cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries, being influenced by your external energy. Please repeat. O my Lord, the material miseries are without factual existence for the soul. Yet, as long as the conditioned soul sees the body as meant for sense enjoyment, he cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries, being influenced by your external energy. Purport. The whole trouble of the living entity in material existence is that he has an independent conception of life. He is always dependent on the rules of the Supreme Lord in both the conditioned and liberated states. But by the influence of the external energy, the conditioned soul thinks himself independent of the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. His constitutional position is to dovetail himself with the desire of the supreme will, but as long as he does not do so, he is sure to drag on in the shackles of material bondage. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:55, prajahati yada kaman sarvan parta manogatan. He has to give up all sorts of plans manufactured by mental concoction. The living entity has to dovetail himself with the supreme will. That will help him to get out of the entanglement of material existence. Om agena timarandasya gananjana salakaya chaksurin militam yena tasmai shri gurve namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Bhitamscha. Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Brindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpa Tirubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the verse once more. O my Lord, the material miseries are without factual existence for the soul. Yet, as long as the conditioned soul sees the body as meant for sense enjoyment, he cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries, being influenced by your external energy. So here in this canto, we've previous to this chapter, we've heard about the manifestation of Brahma from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, which was brought on by the inquiries of Vidura to Maitreya. Vidura asked about the creation of the universe and so on. So Maitreya gave this wonderful explanation, which included the appearance of Lord Brahma and Lord Brahma's vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after he had this vision, now he's offering prayers to this extraordinary personality that he was blessed to be in the presence of. And we find in his prayers that he's full of compassion for the conditioned souls, for us. This is one of the qualities of a Vaishnava, to have compassion for those who are less fortunate. So in the previous verses, he was lamenting how the people of the world are embarrassed by material anxieties. They're always afraid, constantly trying to protect their wealth, their family, their friends, filled with lamentation, unlawful desires, and avaricious, greedy, always trying to accumulate more, lamenting when they lose it. So in this way, Lord Brahma's heart is feeling for the conditioned souls of this world as a genuine Vaishnava. He also says, these people are bereft of hearing and chanting about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they engage simply in inauspicious things, like sense gratification. They're constantly perplexed by hunger, thirst, severe cold, secretion and bile, attacked by coughing winter, I can relate to that myself, blasting summer, rains and many other disturbing elements. They're also overwhelmed by strong sex urges and indefatigable anger. And Brahma takes pity of them, and he is aggrieved for them, for us. So here he's saying, in this present verse that we're studying today, that all these material miseries that he has enumerated previously, they're actually without factual existence for the soul. This knowledge is unfortunately missed by 99.9% of the human race today. Such vital, basic knowledge. Prabhupada would give the analogy of the car and the driver, that the body is like the car, the driver is analogous to the soul. So the car only moves when the driver is present. If the driver is unpresent, of course, in this day and age we have automated drivers, but when Prabhupada was speaking, there was no automated drivers. So the car had no question of moving without the presence of the driver. So it is the driver that gives the car the force to go anywhere, gives it direction. So similarly with the body is simply a vehicle for the soul. The soul sits in the heart of the body, and due to the desires of the soul, therefore there is this movement of the body. So in that sense, we know Prabhupada's famous analogy, sometimes it would be a car accident. The driver would be fine, the car would be damaged, but because the driver is identifying with the car, he comes out furious, his precious car has been hurt, and in his anger he says, you hit me, to the other driver. Where he himself is fine, he's uninjured, it's simply the car. So similarly, he's saying here, the material miseries are without factual existence for the soul. So we know that the soul is Sat Chit Ananda. It's eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. And this is it never deviates. This is its constitutional position, our constitutional position. And yet, because we have attachment to this body, because we identify with the body, then as the body goes through transitions, as it goes through difficulties, we feel that we're suffering. We feel that we are experiencing miseries or pleasures. And this, as Brahma is saying, is not factual. Factually, we are always separate from the body, always free from bodily attachments. It is simply the mind that has created this union. And as a result, we experience the dualities of this world, as Brahma, as I mentioned, enumerated. So he goes on to say, as long as the conditioned soul sees the body as meant for sense enjoyment, he cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries. So this is the whole misconception. We're all born into illusion, born into ignorance. That was the prayer, Om Agyana Timarandasya. That we are born into the darkness of ignorance. Just as in the previous chapter, the creation of Brahma from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Brahma was also born into darkness. And like us, he didn't know who he was. He didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. He didn't even know where he was. Very confused. So he had to engage in penance. And due to this penance, he was enlightened by the Lord. However, most human beings, unfortunately, remain in ignorance and see the body as meant for sense enjoyment. And therefore, as long as we have this vision, this body is meant for sense enjoyment, we cannot get out of the entanglement of material miseries. We're influenced by the Lord's external energy. So we see ourselves as independent, as Prabhupada was saying in the purport here. And that is a complete misconception. In 1976, the United States celebrated its 200th anniversary of being independent from Great Britain. And Bhaktigat had published a special edition for the occasion. And the cover article was Declaring Our Dependence on God. Declaring Our Dependence on God. And in fact, that is the position that we, every moment, we're here by the grace of God. The fact that we can hear, we can see, we can function, this is the grace of God. We had the unfortunate experience just a week ago today that our dear devotee Vrindavan Das passed away last Wednesday. Completely unexpected. One day he's fine, the next day he's passed away. So, such an unfortunate experience. This evening we'll be having a memorial for him. Please come if you can, 6 p.m. in the Haveli, to glorify this devotee who served at Bhaktivedanta Manor. But my point is that we are all dependent. This could happen to any of us at any time, probably me before others due to my age. And then we'll have a little picture by Prabhupada's feet and we'll pray for prayers from the devotees. We are dependent on God for everything, for our food, for our air, for our water. And avoiding this knowledge, ignoring this knowledge, we do so at our own expense. Krishna is not affected. Krishna wants our love. But it's we are missing out. We are thinking, due to mental concoction, that we can enjoy through the senses. This is a beautiful verse that Krishna mentions here. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:55, prajahati yada kaman sarvan parta manogatan. So this manogata, he translates as mental concoction. That is simply illusion to think that we'll actually get enjoyment by giving some sort of pleasure to the senses, because the senses are material. Whatever we find in this material world that we think we can enjoy is also material. And these two things do not give pleasure to the soul. The soul is constantly looking for happiness, as I mentioned, satchit ananda. So that ananda refers to bliss or happiness. This is the nature of the soul. We want to be happy. And we think we can be happy through this material body, but that, unfortunately, is an illusion. And reflective people will see, well, I tried to be happy in this way, it didn't work. I tried to be happy in that way, it didn't work. Well, gosh, where is actual happiness? But unfortunately, because we're in this environment where people tend not to be reflective, they tend not to look to higher authorities for knowledge, therefore this constant endeavor, let me enjoy through gratifying my senses. And therefore we see misery, constant misery, not only misery, but people, as we know now, collectively, we're destroying the environment, changing even, apparently, changing the climate to our detriment, suffering from catastrophes, unexpected catastrophes, all because this constant endeavor, let me enjoy through my senses, let me enjoy through my senses. So this is what's called a mental concoction. This word concoction means something made up. It doesn't have actual substance, it's made up. Very often it's used in relation to cooking, that people get different ingredients, put them together, it's a concoction. They don't actually belong together. And you can, when you taste it, you realize this is just someone's whimsy. So I had a great fortune in this regard. I had association with Jamuna Devi Dasi, who is a excellent, excellent cook. She sings every morning, the lead singer in our Govindam prayers, the astonishing voice as well, extraordinary devotee. So she studied cooking even before she was a devotee, and then when she came to Prabhupada's movement, she learned from Srila Prabhupada traditional cooking methods. And when she went to India with Srila Prabhupada, very often he would instruct her when they had prasadam at life members' homes. He would taste some preparation and say to her, "You go learn how they made this." So she would go into the kitchen and speak with the cook and observe the methodologies and the ingredients and so on. And as a result of all this study, she made an extraordinary cookbook, Lord Krishna's Cuisine. I hope you've all seen that. 500 traditional recipes. It got best cookbook of the year in the 80s. It was the first time in 150 years of giving best cookbook that it was given to a vegetarian cookbook. So she did not concoct. That is my point. She was thoroughly immersed in the tradition and the proper arrangement of spices and other ingredients. So even if she went into a kitchen and she wasn't aware of what ingredients were there, she could come out with something traditional because of her thorough study of the tradition of cooking. So similarly for us, our responsibility, our service to Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual masters would be to thoroughly absorb ourselves in the scriptures, in the knowledge contained in the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, all the scriptures, so that we can present it without concoction, but really appropriate for the audience before us. That was Prabhupada's genius also. There was no concoction. It was always based, thoroughly steeped in the philosophy that Krishna gives. And yet he could present it so it was appealing to the audience in front of him. This is a great art. So we are repeating, but we're repeating in a way that's appropriate so the people who are listening can be attracted, can find it relevant, can find it practical. This is part of the art of trying to give Krishna throughout the world. And we see some devotees are amazingly successful in doing this. I don't know if you've heard of this podcast, Wisdom of the Sages, Raghunath and Kastuba. It's a podcast that now over 1,500 sessions, I suppose you call them. And they have a way of presenting Bhagavatam practically every day so that people throughout the world can hear it. They have thousands and thousands of listeners, and they've actually transformed lives through their presentation of the Bhagavatam. So it's true to the teachings, and yet completely people find it transformative and very relevant. So that is also our responsibility to try to do that. So this idea of trying to give up sense gratification and get free of the material miseries, this is a challenge for all of us because we've been embodied for so long. And I found a verse I wanted to relate to you. It's from the 11th canto, chapter 20. It's text 28. So here, Krishna is speaking. He says, "Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities." So this is Canto 11, Chapter 20, Text 28. It's very striking because Krishna understands that we're struggling, especially in this age of Kali. But sometimes we will succumb to lower urges. We will be delusioned, thinking, yes, I can enjoy this way or that way, even though we know better. Still, the environment is very difficult. There's so many distractions. So he's saying that here, we're awake, and we have some faith in him and his glories and his activities. And we're also disgusted with material activities. We know better. We have the knowledge. We've heard. We've read. We've associated with devotees. And yet, we can't renounce all sense enjoyment. Oh dear, what to do? So he says, this is his instruction, remain happy. Despite our failings, despite our weaknesses, still remain happy. It doesn't help to become morose. It doesn't help to beat ourselves up. That is not productive. He's instructing us, remain happy. Continue to worship him with great faith and with great conviction. And knowing that although sometimes I am bewildered, I do engage in sense gratification, still I know, I'm convinced it will lead to a miserable result. I have that conviction. And so, therefore, the devotee repents those activities. So it's a sincere devotee must be sincerely convinced that simply by the strength of devotional service and the mercy of Krishna, that person will achieve everything auspicious. This should be our firm conviction, that despite our failings, despite our weaknesses, despite our distraction, still, because I'm engaged in devotional service, because Lord Krishna, Lord Nityananda are so merciful, I will be successful, and I'll achieve everything auspicious. By faithful hearing of the mercy and glories of the Lord, one will gradually be freed from all material desire and clearly see at every moment the utter frustration of sense gratification. If you look at people who have been successful in so-called successful in sense gratification, if you look at them, study their lives, study their personality, whatever we're attracted to, if we're attracted to gathering wealth, if we're attracted to being famous, if you look at people who have tremendous wealth, who have tremendous fame or beauty or knowledge or any of these opulences, you can see that they are, as a person, they're not satisfied. So if we see that, then why do we strive for those things? It doesn't make sense. It makes no sense. So simply by logic and reason, we can understand the frustration of these material achievements. And yet still, those desires may come up. So Krishna is instructing us to keep going. Just chant the glories of the Lord with firm faith and conviction, because this is a tremendously powerful spiritual process. And gradually, we will give up the material association and remain the Lord's sincere servant. And that, I think, is something we can learn from all devotees. We have the example of Vrindavan Das, that he was steady. You know, the mind will take us this way and that way by its concoctions. And yet Vrindavan Das, he came every day and did his service, a simple service. And you never could think that, oh, he's being pulled this way or that way, because he came, he showed up, and he did what was required. So this, I think, is a lesson for all of us. The mind will be dragging us here, dragging us there, but let us still show up, do what's required, not look for profit, not look for adoration, not look for distinction, but be happy to be a simple devotee, a sincere devotee, a serious devotee, for the pleasure of Krishna, for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. And this will protect us as we go on in spiritual life. And we'll be blessed by Krishna sooner or later to have genuine taste. We'll give up all taste for material acquisition and have this param drishtva nivartate that Krishna speaks about in the second chapter of the Gita. Param means this higher experience. Drishtva means this higher experience. And we get a higher experience, and it's not difficult to give up lower experiences. It's quite natural to do that. So those are some points. I like this word that Prabhupada uses here, dovetail. Let's see, the sentence is, the living entity's constitutional position is to dovetail himself with the desire of the supreme will. Dovetail is a term, a word, used in carpentry, that if you think of the tail of a dove, it's a bit like a rectangle, right? So if you put two of those together, they fit together so well that it's almost like one piece of wood. That is dovetailing. So if you ever see that, since I've read the term, I've been looking for it now. Sometimes you can see it in drawers or bookshelves or like that. That the carpenter has made the wood. It's two pieces of wood. There's no nails involved. But it fits together so well that it looks seamless. So in this way, we, as living entities, are supposed to dovetail ourselves with the desire of the supreme will. And as long as we do that, we can be free of the shackles of material bondage. This is our great hope and aspiration. By Krishna's grace, by his mercy, through this dovetailing process, and Prabhupada, it's amazing that whatever we love to do, for most things, not everything, but for most things, whatever we love to do, we can do for Krishna. Whether it's singing, whether it's accounting, whether it's cleaning or cooking, we need all of it in Krishna's service. And so we find what we love to do and do that for Krishna, and it becomes sublime. That was a personal experience I had. I loved photography. I had no interest in spiritual life. But by Prabhupada's grace, I discovered that, oh my goodness, I could use photography in his service. And that was something really special, to be able to do what you love and do it for people that you love and for a cause that was way beyond anything in this world. So that is open to all of us, a great treasure waiting for us to explore and to share with others. Yeah. So maybe we'll speak a bit about Narottam Das Thakur, and then we can see if there are any comments or questions. So Narottam Das Thakur, he made a unique contribution to the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His life was explained in a wonderful book by Sitala Devi Dasi, The Life and Glories of Narottam Das Thakur. Today is his appearance day. And she mentioned six areas that were very unique to his contribution. So one of them is that he was empowered personally by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Extraordinary pastime. The second one, he was famous for loving relationships with his godbrothers, god cousins, and his spiritual master. The third, he took very heavy responsibility on the request of Srila Jiva Goswami and his Guru Maharaj, Lokanath Goswami. The fourth is his songs. We sang his song just a few minutes ago, Sri Guru Charanapadma, beautiful songs. And then also the fifth one, he inaugurated the first Gaur Purnima festival. Even to this day, we are celebrating Gaur Purnima. The very first one was inaugurated by Narottam Das Thakur. And then the last was his unique departure from this world. So as far as his empowerment by Lord Chaitanya, he actually appeared after Lord Chaitanya, but Lord Chaitanya was dancing before the Padmavati River and with his devotees. And he started out calling out the name Narottam, Narottam. And the devotees were confused. They said, there's no Narottam amongst your followers here. Who are you speaking of? And Lord Chaitanya explained that Narottam would be appearing, and he wanted to give Narottam love for God. And so the way he did it was unique, that Padmavati, the personality Padmavati, appeared, and Lord Chaitanya, in some form, I don't think we're sure what form, gave her love for Krishna. Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda, Jai Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Jai Shishi Gornitai Kichai. And Padmavati said, "Oh, how I know who this Narottam is?" And Lord Chaitanya replied that just like when I bathe in your waters, the waters expanded beyond the banks. There was a kind of a flood. So similarly, when Narottam comes and bathes, you'll know it's him because the waters will expand beyond your banks. So she held this love for God for quite some time. Narottam did appear. He was the son of a king, Krishnananda, in Kaituri. Kaituri is now part of Bangladesh. And the couple, the king and his wife, were a little elderly. This was their only child. And he was to inherit the kingdom. So as one can imagine, as the prince, he was doted on. He was a very beautiful child, very respectful child, had all good qualities. The unique feature about him as a young boy was that he loved to hear the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna Das was an associate of the Lord. He would come to Kateri, and in the palace he would recite the pastimes, the activities, the qualities of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Narottam would listen in rapt attention, just rapt attention. And so this was quite unique for a young boy. And then as time went on, he became a young teenager, and he had a dream in which Lord Nityananda appeared to him and told him to go to the Padmavati River. And his parents, through astrology, had been warned that he should never go to that river, so he had never actually been there before. But he found his way. He left, after this dream, he left early as he could from the palace and went to the river and bathed there. And then Padmavati saw it was him because, again, the water expanded past the banks. And so she presented to him love for Krishna. And he became a changed person. He was darkish in complexion. After he had this gift from Padmavati, he became golden in complexion and completely in love with Krishna. This love knew no bounds. I mean, how can you measure the extent of love? And so his parents were naturally alarmed by this change. They were devotees, but you know, you worship in your home, everything's quite controlled. And here their son was just overwhelmed with this experience of love for Krishna, and he wanted to go to Vrindavan. And the distance between Kateri and Vrindavan is about 1,400 kilometers. It is not a close distance. And somehow or other he escaped and started running to Vrindavan. So the parents sent detectives after him, and he didn't go by the main path, he went by the forest path, and they actually found him running, this young boy, prince, you know, pampered his whole life running. And so, amazingly enough, the detectives wanted to bring him back, but Narottam convinced them by his love for the Lord to let him continue. And so not only did they let him continue, but they actually gave him some money to help him with his trip. So they had many experiences traveling in this way to Vrindavan. At one point he collapsed in exhaustion and hunger, and then the Lord came and gave him some milk to drink, left him some milk, and he could hardly get to the milk. He was so exhausted and so famished. And yet when he finally did and drank the milk, he had the strength to continue. And so he finally arrived in Vrindavan. He went to the Radha Govinda temple of Rupa Goswami. Unfortunately, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan had already passed away. However, Jiva Goswami was there. Jiva Goswami was informed of the arrival of this extraordinary personality. And so they became close. Narottam became the student of Srila Jiva Goswami, and he became a disciple of Lokanath Maharaj. And that in itself is a story. Lokanath Maharaj had taken a vow that he would not accept disciples. And Narottam had been instructed, and he also had the emotion that this was his spiritual master, no one else, Lokanath Maharaj. And Lokanath Maharaj refused. You know, you've had a vision of Lord Chaitanya. You've had Lord Chaitanya has empowered you with this love. I don't take disciples. but Narottam was fixed. He was determined. And so he served Lokanath Maharaj very humbly, and without letting Lokanath Maharaj know, he would clean the place where he passed every morning. And Lokanath Maharaj, he was elderly, and he started to wonder who was cleaning this place. And so he hid and discovered it was Narottam Das Thakur. And then Narottam Das Thakur won his heart, and he became the one and only disciple of Lokanath Maharaj. So I mentioned one of the things that he's famous for is these loving relationships. So one of them was with his spiritual master. He also with Ramachandra Kaviraj, they were very close. And also Srinivas Acharya Shamananda. It really gives us an understanding of how to bond with Vaishnavas and relish their company and serve with them in great ecstasy. So after some time, it was wonderful in Vrindavan. Narottam Das Thakur was with these great, great Vaishnavas. He was learning from Srila Jiva Goswami, who's unique for his knowledge in Parampara. And Jiva Goswami, during a Kartik festival, made a very special festival, invited many people to come, and then he made an announcement at this festival that he wanted to take the great literature of the Goswamis and bring it to Bengal. Because in Bengal, I didn't yet have this literature. And he was assigning three of his students to do this, and one of them was Narottam Das Thakur, as well as Srinivas and also Shamananda. So this was a real surprise for them. That all of a sudden, he has to leave Lokanath Maharaj, he has to leave Vrindavan, leave Jiva Goswami, and do this very treacherous trip, all these, over 1,000 kilometers to Bengal. However, he took this heavy responsibility, and he took this cartload of books back to Bengal. And of course, there are many pastimes in that. At one time, all the books were stolen. So these three devotees were just beside themselves what to do. So because of this incident, they became separated. And Narottam Das went to Kateri, back to where he had appeared first. And there in Bengal, in this area, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left. And there were quite diverse philosophies, diverse practices going on. It wasn't like a unified movement, but everyone was going in their own direction. There was some concoction going on, as we mentioned this word, concoction. So it was very important that these books arrive, that the knowledge arrives, and Narottam Das Thakur is seeing this splintering of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya in Bengal, in what now is Bangladesh, and he's thinking how to give this knowledge. And so he has this very unique contribution of his songs, the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, the prayers. And Prabhupada remarked several times that in very simple Bengali language, he was able to give the import of these very esoteric scriptures so that people could sing them, even common people could sing them, just like we sing every morning, Sri Guru Charanapadma, and understand the great significance of this knowledge. If you look at this prayer that we sing, every line is full of meaning. Janme, janme, Prabhu say, you are my Lord, birth after birth. So this is indicating not only that we have many births, but also we can have a guide, a spiritual master, who will protect us from the shackles of material existence and help us understand our identity, the identity of the Supreme Lord, and how we can reunite with the Supreme Lord through loving service. So through these very potent songs, Narottam Das Thakur was able to have a tremendous impact on even common people in his area. And then he decided that he would create this celebration of Gaur Purnima, the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And since he had left, he was the heir apparent of the kingdom, So he is way off to Vrindavan, so what to do? So his father had a brother who had a son. So it was the cousin of Narottam Das Thakur. His name was Santosh. So he became the king. And because he had ample resources, and he was also a devotee, a Vaishnava, he helped Narottam Das Thakur in creating a massive festival for Gaur Purnima. They constructed buildings to house all the guests. They had tremendous facility for prasadam. They were installing 5 sets of deities at the time. They created a temple, a gorgeous temple, all with the help of his cousin, Santosh. And then word went out throughout the area, yes, we are having this celebration in honor of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And people came from all over. And as they were coming, they would invite other people. So it was an enormous crowd. And they were able to give proper facility to all the guests that came. And Janava Mata also came at that time. And through this attempt, this very serious attempt, they were able to unify the Vaishnavas in the area and give the actual instructions that Lord Chaitanya left so that people could follow them without concoction, as we say. So that was his inauguration of the Gaur Purnima festival in Khetri. And then as time went on, he had many, many disciples, and it became time for his departure pastimes, which his lead disciple took him to the Ganges. And as he was bathing in the Ganges, his other disciples were around him, and they poured water, Ganges water, on his body. And his body turned into milk, the white substance. And they collected this, and this became the remnants of Narottam Das Thakur, a very unique departure. It's described in several scriptures by his followers. So, extraordinary personality to remember today. You can meditate on his songs. Prabhupada, twice in my presence, Prabhupada challenged us during his lecture. He said, "You sing this song every day, Sri Guru Trapam. Do you know the meaning?" It was after that we started to say the English translation. But if you look at it, every single line is just full of tremendous import. So perhaps there's some comments or questions about these things. It's 8:30. Please.
What inspired Narottam Das Thakur to be so determined to get only Loknath Swami as his spiritual master?
Yeah, I heard in one place also that he had a dream. Someone, Nityananda or Mahaprabhu, appeared to him and instructed him that that is his spiritual master. But also, I've heard that when he met Lokanath Maharaj, he had some sort of a connection with him, a heart connection with him, and so he was determined that he was my guru and no one else. So it could be both, or it could be one.
Concerning that pastime with Lokanath Das Goswami, because what he used to do, he used to clean up after him and clear up even his stall. And he wondered who it was. And then he came back and he saw that it was Narottam cleaning up. And that sort of broke the, you could say, the ice. And he took him on as his devotee. But also there's a verse that it's quite appropriate to Vrindavan to do today, and it's in Sri Upanishad. It says, I'll just read the English translation. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life merge in the totality of the air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all the sacrifice, my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. And I remember that going to devotees commemoration. It's a famous verse in that way, because untimely death, it's like it's happened with Vrindavan, is a classic example of this, where we have to remember, but it's his remembrance that will bring him to us actually again, you know. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madhu Shaka, for the class. My question is that you mentioned about Mother Yamuna Devi Dasi and her different preparations. And I was just wondering, in terms of the Krishna conscious cuisine, if the different preparations are for taste, or if it's more in terms of Ayurveda, like combinations that are healthy for the body in terms of Krishna consciousness.
I heard the Ayurveda. What was the other part?
In terms of if we make preparations of Krishna consciousness purely on taste, or on combinations which are healthy for the body as well.
Yeah, I think the traditional cooking is very healthy for the body. And Jamuna had this ability, as I mentioned, that not only did it taste good, it was also very attractive. There would also, you know, there would be garnishes, there would be varieties of colors, the varieties of textures in her preparations. And healthy, wealthy, and wise. It was all there. Yeah, I mean, Shrutakirti Prabhu was cooking for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada called it simple American prasadam. And then when they went to Vrindavan, Jamuna cooked. And when Shrutakirti tasted it, he realized that he did not know anything about cooking. And so Jamuna served Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had her serve also Shrutakirti. And then he said, "This is Vaishnav behavior. Today she is serving you, so in the future you should cook and serve her." And he was so embarrassed about the quality of his cooking, he never did that. Yeah.
I was listening to the remembrances of Yamuna Devi Dasi recently, and she had a characteristic of when she met other devotees, for her famous hugs. And I remember her hugging Mother Kalangana here, and they both hugged each other, and it was a very touching. I saw it, and it was here in her last time in visiting Great Britain, I just remember that hug she gave Mother Kalangana, because they'd been together in New Vrindavan, and that was very wonderful and enthusing to see. You know.
Yeah, just as we're reading about the loving relationships that Narottam Das Thakur had, so Jamuna also had many, many loving relationships amongst Prabhupada's followers. Thank you so much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srila Narottam Das Thakur.